B-Pod Studios.
Hello, boys and girls.
There were two things that I remember being
like must-see television.
Toucher and Rich on Twitch TV. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Brady takes the snap and retreats. He looks left. He fires the back shoulder. Yeah! Brown! Touchdown, Patriots! Inside the near left pylon.
Welcome to New England, kid. What a throw by the quarterback to the back shoulder.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Be listening this morning at 7:30 and 9:30 for a chance to score a pair of tickets to see the Patriots take on the New York Jets this Sunday at Gillette Stadium, courtesy of Dunkin'. This Patriots season, the pregame starts at Dunkin' for DD Perks members, because on game day, Dunkin' is offering Patriots fans two times the points on any size coffee. So don't just celebrate your team's success from the sidelines. This excludes cold brew nitro and frozen coffee participation. A very limited time offer that's coming up at 7:30. That huge offer. Ted Johnson is in studio, as he is every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. He is in here, and then he leaves here. He goes directly to the gym.
Or did you already get your workout in?
No. It's afterwards.
You're not one of those, like, 4 a.m. gym rats?
I am not. Okay. Getting up this early for your show, this has been a big challenge already in the first 2 weeks. So I'm not a morning guy. I have my CrossFit class starts at 9:30. I go twice a week. And it's the perfect kind of blend for what I'm doing on my own the other 4 days. So I will leave here, go get something to eat, go to my CrossFit at 9:30, put in a couple hours.
You flipping tires and stuff?
You know what? We don't do that. I would love to do that, though.
Of course you
would. I'd love to do that.
Now, when you do CrossFit, is it a requirement that you post at least once a day you doing CrossFit on your Facebook?
I am. That's not my style. Okay. If you see me, my social media game is not, it's not that good. Okay. And there's just something that goes so against my nature to be a self-promoter. I know in this business that it's very important to do that's to connect with your fans. I suck at it, absolutely suck at it. And it's just not my nature to do that. But a lot of people, particularly, I had to stop following certain guys from the gym. Mm-hmm. You know, guys that I befriended, that I'd be on Instagram, and I was like, dude, every picture is you in the mirror flexing.
Holding up the phone.
Yeah, I just can't do it. I'm like, sorry. AJ, you're a good guy, but I can't follow you on. But I can't
AJ's
follow
listening
you on,
right now.
I'm just going to say,
sorry, AJ, knows. If you're listening, that's why I stopped following you, bro. Every single picture is a selfie of you at the gym. It's just too much. So that's just not my style, but the training is, I love it. I'll be there right after the show.
All right. So there is a lot of talk about how this defense might be the best Patriots defense, of all time, I've heard being thrown out there. What's a better defense, this one or the Ted Johnson
03-04
defense,
which is better,
that you played for the Patriots?
Yeah, the 04 is a lot of people, the two defenses that people talk about in the Bill Belichick era mostly are the 2014 defense and then the 2004 defense. And I was very reluctant at the beginning of the season. I knew this was going to be a special defense based on the way they played at the end of last year, guys. And you have to kind of look at it and I just remember how we felt going into 04 season based off of the end of the last season, the end of the 03 season. Mm-hmm. We just felt this collective confidence in each other that maybe we hadn't felt before. And it was a very veteran group. Okay, so it was a lot of older guys on defense. If you look at the average age of the guys on that defense, it was probably one of the older defenses in the NFL. And you go, well, how's that a good thing? It is a good thing when you're playing in a Bill Belichick system, which is very advanced. He changes what he does every single week, and he has guys play multiple positions. So many coaches are terrified of doing that. They keep it simple, and they don't put a lot mentally on their guys because they're just afraid of guys messing up and having missed assignments and then it just not looking good. So Belichick has an older defense this year that have been in the system for a very, very long time. And that, to me, and then they finished very, very strongly at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. That momentum and that collective confidence carries into this year. You saw it in preseason.
Yep.
And it had the potential of really being a really great defense. But I was hesitant to compare it to the 04 defense based on two games, you could say, oh, this can definitely be as good, if not better, than that 0-4 defense, which is saying a lot, because that 0-4 defense had studs at every level, defensive line, linebackers, and secondary. I would say they've just fine-tuned their kind of system here, in the sense that they run very advanced pass rushes, more advanced than maybe what we did, which include linebackers, which include D linemen, where it's two and three guys working in conjunction together to create mismatches on the offensive line to create pressure. And so it's a very advanced the way that they're doing it. We ran very advanced blitz packages back in 04, and Belichick can't stand running blitzes if you can't execute them. We go, well, it seems pretty simple. Everybody kind of knows what they're doing. Well, no, it's not. There's advanced blitz packages that the Patriots like to run, safeties, corner blitzes, running two inside linebackers in there, and you have to pick guys, and you have to do different things that are there's subtleties in which how you blitz. And if you don't get it right, then you can really be exposed. We were very good at running blitzes. This team so far has been aggressive in its play calling, and they're executing those blitzes. So, and then the secondary, I mean, there's just so much versatility in the secondary and at the linebacker position that it allows them to do things week to week that are different, and it really can mess up a quarterback in an offense. And so this team doesn't have many weaknesses on that side of the ball, so it potentially could be one of the best, if not the best, defense that Belichick's put together. And they're very good, you guys, in the situational part of games, okay? The two main things I think that you have to really look at that kind of indicates how good a defense is, how good are they in the red zone, how good are they on third down? Those are two very important categories. And my feeling is that this Patriots defense, I haven't looked it up, are probably ranked first in the NFL. It just threw two games.
Sure, yeah.
I get it, they're cupcakes. The Steelers
first
game,
one wasn't
so
really a cupcake.
The Steelers weren't cupcakes, but obviously the last week was. Still, doesn't matter. That's still NFL competition that they're dominating against.
Okay, so you had, a bunch of stars on your defense. You know, people who obviously were big names, and we were talking about Jamal Adams. So Jamal Adams had two back-to-back penalties. He's basically the best player on the Jets, and yet he gets benched at the end of the game. The final five snaps. Was there ever a situation where Belichick benched any of you guys, like, you know, some of the star players, if they did something wrong? And what would the reaction be from you if, like, do you think he's justified in being pissed? I guess
first
is what
of
I'm
all,
trying to say.
This is, you're probably making about one tenth of the money that Jamal Adams is making.
Understood, but I mean, you're still out there. I mean, as a member of this defense, and,
right.
And I mean, and I don't even know if there was an instance where somebody like Bruschi or whatever ended up getting benched, for doing something wrong, but.
I hear what you're saying, Rich. I don't recall that ever happening. There was at that point, the 0-4 defense in particular, I think what Greg Williams is doing is to try and establish a culture.
Oh boy.
Right? He's
the one guy that could promote your culture,
right,
is Jamal Adams.
Right. You exactly. That's exactly right, Freddie. You got it. You have to know your personnel. You have to know the tone of what's going on there. And if you're going to be the hardo to your best player to prove a point when the season looks like it's in peril,
you better have the hardware to back it up.
There you go.
You
better have the pelts on the wall. You better have the ultimate respect. You better be a very accomplished, decorated defensive coordinator that has a ton of respect in that room if you're going to pull moves like that. and that's the thing is so many of these coaches, I think, have a hard time establishing culture with today's athlete. Today's athlete is a whole different animal. I mean, it really, really is. And so you have to it can't be easy to navigate for these guys to try and connect with these guys, try and establish a kind of a hard-nosed, tough, mentally tough, accountable type of team or defense when you have kind of this new age, more empowered type of player that is playing the game. It's if you're going to prove a point in week two at the end of a game of a blowout,
right?
You've already pretty much indicated you have no control over your team,
right? Yeah. And it's taken two games for him to do that. All right, Ted Johnson in studio with us. He will continue to be here until 8 o'clock, 617-779-0985. Remember, at 7:30, we got tickets for Sunday's nice afternoon in the sun.
The Foxborough Massacre?
Listen, you don't have to, you know, you can look at your phone. you can enjoy the day. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub. Get the app. Get the Sports Hub. Get Toucher and Rich. Down. Download the Sports Hub app today.
Shotgun snap to Fitzpatrick, dropping back at first and 10. He throws across the middle, catch by Balazs. No, he fumbled into the hands of Collins, who runs down the right sideline. One man to beat a lineman. He runs to the 10. He beats him to the pylon. Touchdown, Patriots!
What a play. What a heads-up play by Jamie Collins. I mean, Miami can't even function at this point. What an embarrassment. This team's going to be bad for a long time.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Ted Johnson in studio. Now, Ted, we're talking about the defense this year, and you keep bringing up Belichick's name. If you were a general manager of a team, would you hire a defensive coach from the Patriots? Because it sounds like it's pretty much Belichick their success is predicated on Bill Belichick. And you see what's happening with Flores. You can't tell.
No.
But you see what I know, John. But you see what's happening with Patricia.
Romeo Crennel.
Yeah.
Eric Mangini. It's Mike Vrabel now. I mean, even though he didn't coach here, he played for Bill. So, you know, Bill's the architect of those defenses. I mean, from a strategy standpoint, from a game standpoint, from a visionary standpoint, seeing what players he feels he can use in certain roles, not every coach, for instance, let's say there's a guy that they drafted in the third round. Out of Michigan, Chase Winovich, Bill sees fitting a specific role.
Mm-hmm.
He's a third down specialist. That's when he goes in. Now he went out there in against the Dolphins and wreaked havoc on third down. Not every coach maybe sees a player like that, you know, and they go, okay, mm-hmm. I'll use him specifically for XYZ. Bill sees that. So Bill just sees things that the other coaches don't. And that's the biggest difference, you know. And Bill, the Saturday morning meetings he has are some of my favorite meetings. A lot of people don't talk about the Saturday morning meetings, but what he does is after at the end of the week and all the game plans in, you've had a full week of practice and it's your final tune up and before you go play a team on the next day, he has this team film session where he will take. Basically, and it's really fascinating for a defensive player to sit in there and hear what he's saying about what the offense needs to do. But he basically will say, all right, defense, when he's addressing the defense in this meeting, and he has video, and he has his old red pointer just to highlight his points. If we do these three things, we will win the game. And he kind of outlines, you know, mm-hmm. for instance, you know, if we're playing the Jets and it was Wayne Corbett in the slot and it was third down,
mm-hmm.
we were not going to let Wayne Corbett, when he was in the slot on third down, catch the football. And if we do that, we'll win the game. Okay, so just to give you an example, if we're playing the Kansas City Chiefs back in the day and you get into the red zone, there's one guy you need to stop in the red zone when you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, and that was Tony Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. We were going to double team his ass. And if we double team him and eliminate him from making plays in the red zone, we will win the game. So just to give you some examples, right, it just not every coach, these coaches we mentioned probably have the ability to scout the opponent quite like Bill Belichick does. So he's just, his football acumen is so much on a different level that I think these other coaches, regardless of the fact that they coached under him and learned from him, doesn't mean you still see the board, you still see the same things he does.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, let's face it, I think the hardest, biggest challenge for these former coaches is how do you get buy-in? They just can't. They can't get their players to buy into what they're selling. Belichick got buy-in by putting game plans together and in those Saturday meetings saying specifically, if we do this, we will win the game. We'd go do those things.
And he'd win.
We win the game. You got, and then you got buy-in.
So you mentioned something about Belichick off the air, and I want to bring it up because we were talking about how there's a lot of talk now. Is this team going to, you know, run the table? Will it be a perfect season?
Sure.
And you said that you believe Belichick what?
I believe Belichick wants to go undefeated so bad. I think he wants to. That is maybe his final kind of, you know, coup de grace. Like, here we go. This is a cherry on top of what's been a brilliant career.
It's one thing he hasn't done. But the only
thing about that is Ted, is that he has said so much in the past that the year that they blew the perfect season, he wishes they would have lost one game because it would have taken the pressure off of them. He's said that. He goes, you know, maybe there was too much stress on the perfect season and it backfired on us in the Super Bowl. But you think that he's not thinking that way this year. He wants to. This is something.
He wasn't thinking that way that year. You believe everything Bill Belichick says?
No.
I would be a hazard caution you on that if that's how you think, Rich. And I hear what you're saying. He said that. But there's clear evidence that he didn't feel that way. And if you go back, and I was talking to Matt Castle. I do a pre- and post-game show on NBC Sports Boston for the Patriots games with Matt Castle. And Matt was saying the other day that when he was on the team in 2007, they went to the Meadowlands and they played the Giants. Okay. And it
final
was
regular season
final
game.
Final regular season game. And it was a
close struggle.
But do you remember it was a, for all intents and purposes, a meaningless game for the Patriots?
Yep.
They locked up the first round bye. Okay. So you're going into the last regular season game of the year against the New York Giants. And you've got a first round bye. You lose that game. Nope. You know, who cares? It doesn't matter. You're still the number one seed. Why play your starters? Or why play them deep into the game? And Matt Castle was thinking that he was under the impression that those guys would go out there and play a quarter or two quarters, that he would take over in the second half.
He said they're just waiting.
The game was close. Belichick never took out any of the starters that entire game. And they played that game as if they had to win that football game. That, to me, right there, when he told that story, it was like, yeah, he wanted to win that game.
But a lot of people pointed that game almost as being kind of the, hey, you could have taken your foot off the gas a little bit, saved, you know, kept a little gas in the tank for the playoffs, and maybe, just maybe, not only mentally but physically, the pressure might be a little bit less when you're in the Super Bowl.
It makes sense. But I also think it also kind of highlights what I'm trying to say. The point is,
he wants that greatness.
Belichick is gluttonous. He is a killer. He wants to just destroy the competition.
And he's willing to do anything, including things that I'm under the theory that he's not the greatest guy in the world. That, you know, and people go, well, he can compartmentalize these.
Compartmentalize.
All right, shut up. I'll say it the way I want to say it.
See, that time I was quiet.
You can compartmentalize things. Turn them into carts.
How do you say it?
Compartmentalize.
Yes. Thank you very much. These things. And I'm like, no, you can't. Like, you can't. Like, there's no way. That's schizophrenic. I mean, there's no way you can do that. And so my feeling about his, and I don't know if this is even a question, is that he is willing to do anything to win these things.
But aren't most coaches in the NFL?
Not like him.
This is different.
Okay, okay. I want to hear Ted. I want to hear Ted.
He's a little
Ted,
different.
Give me some examples.
Well, he takes out emotion. He can do things that, you know, would say would maybe cross the line as far as what is maybe, you know, would define you as a good guy.
Example.
You know? Well, I would rather not get into details about my personal experience with him, but he's crossed the line with me where it was a very personal thing that he did something that made it very personal. So I can speak from experience. So I think now, can Bill work things out and can he, like, you know, accept maybe his part in it and move on, yeah, he can. I mean, you've seen players that he's had issues with come back, and they're, you know, they've worked things out. But there are things that I feel like Bill can cross the line and maybe be a bit, I don't know, just, you know, it's hard to explain.
I know it's hard for you to
it's because
I guess what I'm trying to see is how is that different than other coaches?
Well, I just don't think other coaches have that killer mentality that they'll do whatever it takes. They'll step on any guy's throat. They'll cross boundaries to do anything it takes to win. I just don't think every coach is wired that way. Mm-hmm. I think Bill is, and Bill makes no apologies. And I don't know how many friends he's made. You know, doing it the way he's done it. I said something back after I retired. You know, I said something to the fact that, you know, Bill Belichick's going to walk into the Hall of Fame, first ballot. And I said, I wonder if any of his former players will be there to see it. You know, and it was just, he has that kind of where you love to win. Yeah. It's awesome winning. But he doesn't necessarily endear himself with you. I mean, it becomes a cold-hearted business. And there's a lot of probably stories out there, and I'll be honest, that guys aren't going to talk about because they don't want to criticize the great Bill Belichick. His success and his winning has created this kind of, you know, bubble, if you will, around him, that he's untouchable, that he is above reproach, that you can't criticize him for some of the things he's done. But he has crossed the line time and time again, and I'd rather not get into specifics, but it's I've seen it.
I understand. And so, I mean, you being, you know, right in the middle of all of it, I'm trying to think, though, you know,
I
think
I'll say this, though.
But real quick to your point about, you know, will any other players be there? I mean, it's almost, I can name like 10, 15 players who think that he's the greatest, a lot of his.
But he's changed over the years, too.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that you think maybe he's not the guy that he was?
Oh, I think he's softened up a bit. Oh, man. I think a key turning point in rehabbing maybe his image regarding players. Now, was the Malcolm, after the Malcolm Butler benching in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I think he's totally transformed himself and become more of the chill Bill, and has made himself, I think, more likable and more human with his players. But one thing, Bill is also not a dumb. He knows that he has to get certain players on that team on his side.
Why did he do it after Malcolm Butler? Was it because he got such a hit?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because, he got hammered.
Yeah.
The public, the fans, the Patriot fans, the look. I mean, can you imagine? Who wants to go play for that guy? I mean, you got Malcolm Butler, tears coming down, a very popular player.
Ex-players tweeting about how bad of a decision it was.
That was a low-down, dirty kind of thing, move to do. And it was very public. Mm-hmm. And Bill,
the biggest stage.
And Bill typically, more times than not, he makes those decisions, and it works out for him. It didn't in that case. And so it was the huge spotlight on him. And I think I think from that point on, he's like, I got to relax. I got to rehab my image.
It does seem like he has, at least amongst the players, you're right.
I just like that they signed Antonio Brown, which is fine. And then he got up there and acted like everyone's a prick for answering to ask about it. Caller number 10, if he's so concerned with his image. Caller number 10 right now. So continue to call in and say how he's the greatest in your underwear. Caller number 10 right now, the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Patriots take on the Jets this Sunday at Gillette Stadium, courtesy of Dunkin'. The Patriots season, the pregame starts at Dunkin' for DD Perks members, because on game day, Dunkin' is offering Patriots fans 2x the points on any size coffee. So don't just celebrate your team's success from the sidelines. This excludes cold brew, nitro, and frozen coffee. Participation may vary. Limited time offer.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
For the latest podcasts, the latest sports news, and for Tutcher and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
Yeah, I'll talk about the game. I've already commented on that. I'm not going to say anymore.
Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. We have Ted Johnson in the studio, as we will every Wednesday in the 7 o'clock hour. And Rich, we were talking to him about Bill Belichick and, you know, players' experiences with him and how the Malcolm Butler situation might have changed his attitude.
Well, and you were saying, too, that Bill Belichick would do anything to win and even go across certain lines that might be questionable, morally.
Yes.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
You're right. I would say he would. You say Freddie, your proclamation is that he's a bad guy. I know he can do bad guy type of things where it's inappropriate. Crossing the line. Where you're kind of dehumanizing the guy to some degree.
And you're saying that that is different than the other coach of the NFL. He takes it to a different level.
Yes.
Okay. So, but your opinion is, though, once the Malcolm Butler thing happened, it was the first time, really, that around here, it was always in Bill We Trust, yeah, that even his most ardent supporters were like, what was that all about? And so he took this hit. Mm-hmm. And you're saying that Bill kind of changed after that, his attitude with players, right?
That's what it feels like to me. It was after that, it was such a public, just on the biggest stage, showing everybody kind of what he's capable of doing. And so the whole world saw it. And the fans, for the first time, questioned, you know, his decision-making and were critical of his decisions. And that was, it had to impact him in some way. You just saw, I think, a more likable, more engaging, a more approachable type, of head coach after that.
Mm-hmm.
With the players.
Yeah.
And so it just seems that he's changed kind of his attitude.
Now, when he does something wrong, you were mentioning there's something that if he does a player wrong, in your opinion, or in the player's opinion. You said he's really good at doing something to kind of win them back.
Right. So if there's something that he's done to a player that is you know, where the player has a right to be upset and that potentially I think can maybe, you know, expose him. You know, I mean, Malcolm Butler he knows what happened. I mean, Malcolm Butler knows exactly why he was benched. Malcolm Butler hasn't said anything and partly because he's still active in the NFL. So if you're an active player, you're not going to hear maybe, you know, what really happened while you're still playing. But what Bill will do, and he did this in the case of Malcolm Butler, is my if I recall this correctly, is that he reached out to Malcolm Butler, or that Malcolm Butler and Bill Belichick did connect after that offseason, after that Super Bowl. And Malcolm Butler said, I think he said as much, that they worked things out, you know, and that they build smooth things over with Malcolm. That, you know, we basically, I don't know, for whatever, I think to some degree, said enough to Malcolm Butler that Malcolm was like, all right, we're cool then, coach.
But so what's the ulterior motive to that?
You're saying it's not genuine, that this is a tactic of his to kind of keep things under control.
I don't know if it's fair for me to say if it's genuine or not, but I would say that's definitely maybe a strategy of his.
So it's not genuine.
Well, maybe. Maybe not.
Put it this way.
It happened to me.
It can be half and half. So he reaches out, and you think that maybe part of it is so these people do not blast him in the press and expose him for what you're saying is what he is behind the scenes.
I feel like there's a part of that going on, yes.
Wow.
That's it. And so in my case, and again, I won't go into details, but when I had my issues with him in 2002, it was not good. It was not a very good work environment.
And it went beyond football. It was personal.
It was very personal. It was very personal. And he, week six or seven, I forget. And that was, it was a terrible time for me because I was just not mentally 100% focused. And, I was just down on, you know, going to work and playing at the level I wanted to play at. And Bill saw that. Bill came to me week six or seven, and he extended the proverbial olive branch, if you will, and said, "Ted, we got to work this out. All right." And he gave me some compliments about how I was playing in the game before. We played the Miami Dolphins the day before and said, gave me some nice feedback on how I played. And it was like he was human right at that moment. And you know what? It was the first time I've ever seen that side of him where he was holding himself accountable, wanting to work things out. It wasn't going well between us. How can we make this better? We need you on board. And that was it. And you know what? I was a captain the next year. Didn't have any problems with Bill the rest of my career because he did that. Bill holding himself accountable with a player and coming back, looping back around eventually to smooth things over with that player is kind of a powerful exchange, if you will.
Can I?
My feeling is that's what happened with Malcolm Butler, because Malcolm Butler potentially could, you know, spill the beans and basically answer the question that we're all dying to know, right?
Can I play devil's advocate? Do you think that maybe when you're in the heat of the moment, you just make bad decisions and say things you regret, and he's legitimately apologizing or trying to make up for it?
There was never nothing in the heat of the moment, though. It was a concerted plan to do, you know, what he wanted to do with me. And I think even Malcolm Butler, it wasn't heat of the moment that he decided to just bench Malcolm Butler. That was planned probably that whole week. You know, he practiced Malcolm Butler the whole week.
Or heat of the moment was a bad way to phrase it. Do you think that just sometimes
if it was
he
heat
looks
of the
back
moment,
on
that's
bad
one
decisions.
Thing that you would almost be able to excuse for him.
Right.
Yeah. If it was heat of the moment, all right, coach, it was heat of the moment. But if it feels like a calculating kind of really concerted effort to screw you over, then there's nothing heat of the moment where you can just say, it's easy to just say, all right, chalk it up to that.
Now that's interesting. Why are no other players talking about this? Because I've never heard it really people speak about Bill Belichick like this, and it's very interesting. Why do you think other players don't speak the way you do?
He's got too much power. Bill Belichick is, I mean, he's the greatest coach to ever coach.
Yeah.
He's just got a lot of power, and he's got tentacles, and he's far-reaching his power. And so, you know, if you criticize Bill, I think players feel like there's a price to pay for that, and it's just not worth it to players.
Wow.
And so you will not hear, you know what, and if you criticize Bill, then you don't get invited behind the velvet rope. You're probably cut off from a lot of things, and a lot of guys don't want to get cut off from that.
Even if you're in the media and you're a former player, he'll do that to you. And Ted, we've talked about this before. A book's a coming. Someday a book's a coming, and we're going to find out a lot of stuff that happened behind the scenes. We'll be right back with Ted Johnson as he's in studio in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Sports Hub.
I can't believe he did that.
Rich.
I didn't want to be there because he was embarrassed.
98.5 Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. Ted Johnson in studio, as he will be every Wednesday for the 7 o'clock hour. All right, so we were talking off air, and this is no secret. The next few weeks of Patriots football are going to be real boring.
It's just going to be the scorched earth tour.
This Antonio Brown thing, we'll see where that goes. But other than that,
it has the feel of 2007 all over again, doesn't it, a little bit? As far as just
throwing out of the shotgun while up 37, yep. It sounds exactly like 2007.
Yep. Yes. Circa 2007 for sure.
Yep.
Why do you think they did that? Why do you think that they were you know, blitzing and throwing out of the shotgun when they had the game? And it was against a former assistant, too.
Yeah, they called timeout up 43 points with 10 seconds left to make sure that they preserve the shutout.
Yeah. And there's 1 second left on the in the game. And the Dolphins are, but you know, down in the Patriots' territory.
They call a timeout. They call, what I just said.
But, no, but they run a casino blitz. They blitz the house on the last play of the game.
That's right.
So I mean, like, are you kidding me? You're gonna fall out.
He
blitz?
Wanted that shutout. Like
badly.
They wanted that shutout.
No, this is so, I'm going to embarrass everyone I possibly can this year. So you, I agree with you. He's gluttonous.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my point. Like there's a point where you build. It's like. It's never enough. So you it's crazy. He doesn't care about a 19-0 season. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
This year, he does.
That's amazing. I agree with that.
And it has a very similar feel to 2007, where he wants to go. And there's some theories, and I don't want to steal Burt Breer's thunder, but he threw out there, you know, a little bit like, well, you wonder is, you know, was Antonio Brown bringing him in to? It was a reason for bringing him in when you already had a really good offense, and you saw what they did in week one without Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
To help secure the 19-0 kind of thing. That's one kind of thing to think about. Why is he throwing the ball? Why is he running up the score at the end of the game? There's, you know, the one theory that's been floated out there is that Brian Flores really kind of fleeced Bill Belichick's coaching staff.
That's right. Took all those guys with him.
Took all those guys with him.
All of them.
Right?
Like, he likes Flores, but then at some point you're just like, dude.
All my guys? Like, I think Bill, for the most part, has no problem with his assistants going on and kind of running their own ship. But then there's a way in which in his eyes, maybe there's etiquette in how you do it. And so I think maybe there's a line of thought out there that where he might feel like Brian Flores went too far in kind of, let's face it, there was a mass exodus of coaches, assistant coaches on this staff this offseason, unlike any season before. Mm-hmm. And we're all kind of like, what is going on? What do they know that we don't know? And so there's all these different theories on why that happened. But that's one that was floated out there that, you know, that he was a little miffed at Brian Flores for taking a lot of assistance with him. I don't know. But let's face it, shotgun. 42-year-old quarterback. You have a phenomenal team and a chance in a conference in the AFC that is down more than it's ever been.
Yep.
And you're still chucking the ball. You're not worried about your quarterback getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You see all the fluke injuries that are kind of going on around the league with some of these quarterbacks, and so it just kind of something's not right there. So there's something to that. We'll never know. But I thought it was a little bit over the top. Him, still chucking the ball up 37-0.
I thought the easiest theory was that last time they were there, they didn't play the last. I mean, they played the entire game until the last 8 seconds, and then you saw how it ended. And I think that he was trying to send a message that we are not going to get mentally lazy. Now, whether he's going to continue to do that, I don't think he will. Ted, I honestly don't think if they're up 20 something against the Redskins, they're going to continue to do that with like a minute left in the game. They're not. I think.
I think this is 2007. They're throwing the ball all over the place till the very end.
Yeah, why would they not do that?
Brady needs that 50th touchdown pass. Randy Moss needs that 23rd touchdown.
I mean, if he
catch.
Does, it'll be funny as hell.
It's numbers. I mean, I'm going to score 600 points this season if I can.
I don't know why you would change it. I mean, this is what he's going to do.
It doesn't matter if it's Flores or.
No, I heard the same theory.
Jay Gruden, it does not matter.
I heard the same theory is that the Miami Miracle.
It was Jeff Howe. Who said that he had heard that from either a player or somewhere? I thought that was a solid theory.
No, not when you're up by 5,000 points.
I think he just wanted to send a message. We're never letting that happen again.
Nope, he's going to embarrass everybody this season. If he can, if he has a team down by 4 touchdowns, we're going empty. We're going empty. 5 wideouts. Let's go.
He's got crazy emotional problems.
All right, real quick, because you're here and you played against him. Eli Manning, let's not talk about whether or not he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Let's talk about whether or not you think he's going to get into the Hall of Fame.
That's because that makes him agree with you as opposed to Fred and I.
Well, because listen, I don't think
he does not deserve to be in.
I know the criteria is enough for him to get in and be voted in.
He's got numbers because of his longevity. He's been mediocre most of his career.
He is in. Yep. He played in New York.
Wait.
On top of that.
Since Ted agrees with me, let him speak.
All I'm saying is that I believe that because he's from New York, he's part of football like royalty, being a Manning.
Peter King,
and he's got two MVPs in the Super Bowl. He is going to go in first ballot. He's going to be voted in.
Your first 2 points should be irrelevant.
Yep.
The third point, okay, two MVPs, that's saying something. But I look at Eli Manning, and nothing about his play says to me that he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Has he had two brilliant moments in Super Bowls against, you know, the Patriots? Yes. But the rest of his body of work is, and particularly the last 5 years have been horrendous.
Well, maybe people will point at the actual team that was around him. They might say that there's, you know, the coach. But you know, I mean,
right, you look at the Super Bowls he won.
People can make excuses. They're going to look at those two MVP Super Bowl, and they're going to be like,
he
he's
had two runs of 5 weeks that were otherworldly.
Yep.
Congratulations. In 2 years out of how many years?
But look at the standard. You were talking about it. What's his name? Is in the Hall of Fame. Stabler. And you know what? If you're a Patriots
quarterbacks
fan,
were different then. They were.
Okay.
Numbers. Stabler threw 30 picks in a year. And he's in because quarterbacking at that time in the mid-70s is far different than it is now.
He played drunk.
What were those?
That's true.
What were those giant teams back when Eli was quarterbacking and in the Super Bowl? What were they known for?
Defense. Well, who got the MVP?
Then why is Phil Simms?
They had to give it to somebody.
They didn't give it to anyone on the defense. They gave it to Eli Manning.
Yeah, well, I mean, Phil Simms and what the hell is it? Hostetler should be in the Hall of Fame, too.
If you are a Patriots fan, one thing you can say is that you should be rooting for Eli Manning to get in. Because if he gets in, entirely because of postseason performance, then chances are Edelman might get in.
Ooh.
If that standard has been set where regular season stuff doesn't matter as much, I mean, Edelman's a guy right now who not only has MVP in the Super Bowl, but he also has the second most receiving yards, only behind Jerry Rice.
And then we're going to have an avalanche of memes and, you know, photo, you know, cut and paste Edelman with the gold jackets on.
But if Eli gets in, you have to consider Edelman because it's almost the same standard.
I just find it odd that if you're a Patriots fan, you would give a rat's ass if Edelman made the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame exists for, you're never going to go there. What, are you going to go to Canton?
And I've always tried to figure out, so you're talking about Edelman's postseason stats. Are postseason stats supposed to factor in the Hall of Fame?
Yes they should. They should.
It's in the biggest stage, in the most clutch moments.
I would
love to know if that is actually debated in those meeting rooms.
I bet they just go from the top down, and it starts with championships, and then it goes with MVPs, and it's almost all based on postseason.
Okay, there's just a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame that did not have illustrious postseason careers because their team sucked and they were never in the postseason.
Marino,
Fouts. you just wonder if it's weighed that heavily. It's every guy. It can be judged on the 16-game regular season.
Peter King's going to get up in that boardroom and talk for an hour and a half about how good Eli Manning is and how, you know, the last 5 years
top
wasn't his fault.
Top 10 in passing touchdowns.
Yeah, he's going to say
and
that.
Passing and yards.
Philip Rivers is going to go in for the
then
same
Stafford
reason.
Besides the hardware, the two MVPs, does he look like a Hall of Fame quarterback to you?
No, he looks like an Oklahoma derp standing on the side of the road with his mouth agape. No, he doesn't. He does not look.
Brandon Merriweather's description of Eli Manning is still the best. I don't know if I can repeat it, but it was pretty awesome.
I forget what he called him.
He said he looks real. Basically, he looks really stupid.
No, he said Eli looks like there's something wrong with him.
Oh, yeah.
But really, he's a good guy. It's Brandon Merriweather who said that. One of the funnier moments he's ever had on this radio station.
Ted Johnson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted.
All right, boys, see him.
Enjoy
seeing
the CrossFit. No commercials here, just the headline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.